You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined by my full crew, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, Nicole Hale. Hello, gang.
Hello.
What's up? How are we doing?
Hey, excellent. So, it is Fanboy versus Phoenix Jones as comic books cross over into reality and other crazy things happen this week. I don't know, the world's ending. But other than that, there's lots of comics and stuff.
But the world's ending? It's a year early.
Oh, that's right. We've got another, like, 18 months. Sorry, or 12, or 14 months, I guess. But no, did y'all hear about this Phoenix Jones thing? It's got me all interested.
Yeah, yeah, that was... Right. Phoenix Jones is, what is he? He's the real-life superhero from...
Seattle?
Seattle, Chicago, somewhere like that.
Yeah. I think it's Seattle.
He blindsided me with this one. Yeah, but he got arrested.
Got busted. You can see the video online. There's actually a video of the incident, I guess, if you will. Phoenix and his entourage's side of it is that they rolled up on people having a fight in the street. They ran down there, started pepper spraying people and yelling for the police to be called. The people who were standing there claim that they were just frolicking, their words, and they were dancing in
the
street.
That's
a great
word. So, that is clearly just some criminals conspiring to take down our defenders.
That's yeah. Right. So, but as a result, Phoenix Jones was arrested, has been charged with assault. He actually had his first appearance in court the other day. He did wear...
JD, you're not phrasing this right at all. His secret identity has been exposed.
I know. I know. He wore his mask to court, but they made him take it off, which...
They bloody did.
Of course, that was revealed when he was arrested. What is his name? Yeah. He's got a cool name,
too. I had
it
here a second ago. It's Benjamin John Francis Fodor.
Fodor. That's a great last name. I wish I had that last name.
Not simply walk into Fodor.
No. So, a little bit of intersection of, like, I felt like I'm living in a Watchmen universe or something where there's...
So is his supervillain going to, like, come and hunt him down now or something? What's
Maybe,
going on?
Maybe. I don't know. Like, harass his family. I think his supervillain at this point is called the Seattle State Government. Government. That's... probably his biggest enemy at this point.
He's actually the leader of a 10-member Citizen Crime Prevention Patrol.
Right.
Who call themselves the Rain City Superhero Movement.
You mean the Justice League, right?
Yeah, it's the Seattle version of the Justice League.
Well, I was just saying, this is a real thing going on as well, because I don't know if you guys watched Castle a couple weeks ago. That was their whole theme was this... costume vigilante that was out there portraying superheroes.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to like when I was doing like reviews of Twilight Guardian and stuff. That's the stuff that Hickman was, I think that's his name, was talking about. As far as, I mean, he had interviewed and worked with all those real life superhero people. So it's kind of interesting because we have this intersection, but of course the police don't usually enjoy citizens, meddling, if you will, in their affairs. Mm. So I think they're probably going to...
Unless they do so successfully and we can celebrate them. Or they can fly.
Right. Unless they can fly and then we love them. Or they hide.
The members of the Rain City Superhero Movement include Buster Doe, Red Dragon, Green Reaper, Thorn, Gemini, No Name, Catastrophe, Thunder 88, Penelope, and the best one of the lot, Purple R-E-I-G-N, Purple Rain.
Wow. I think Phoenix Jones definitely drew the good card for that group.
If you had read those names off and I didn't know you were talking about superheroes, I would honestly thought you were talking about a chat room.
That or like titles of like 90s albums or something. I don't know.
It does just go to show you that Kick-Ass wasn't far off.
No.
Life imitating art. That's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, that's funny. But there's other actual comic news. New York Comic Con is this going on this weekend. So I assume there's news from that. Yes?
Yep. But just before I start into that, I see the chat saying everybody's frozen.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yes. We have actually gone off air.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
On the Ustream. Perhaps not on Justin TV.
Down the system.
Well, yeah, you might switch to a different channel.
Justin, you know, HMRC, the one that says Justin is down too.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Yes.
Live stream?
JD.
I don't know. The local's recording, so we may not end up being live this week. So.
Fix it.
I can't fix it. I have to cut the whole thing. We have to start all the way over. Do you want to do that?
Not really.
Okay. So... Anyway,
we're rolling.
I know we're doing good. So
we're in a rare situation where we can say what we want and edit it later. No one knows.
Right. So it'll be a surprise for everybody. Sorry, folks. So anyway, okay.
Okay. Well, we're not gonna do live then.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're already recording, so we're good.
Oh, bugger. All right.
I'd have to stop the recording and reboot everything, and we have to start the show over.
No.
Why do you suck?
Me? Why does it have to be me? Why can't
You're
it be the technology?
Charge.
Well, that doesn't like mean I developed
the
technology
buck stops
thing.
With you.
Oh, okay. So, is that
someone was saying that they just got a hint of audio from Justin?
See, try Justin. I think Justin is where it's at. Well, yeah, the ad will play the ad and then it'll go through. Anyway, all right, carry on.
They can't hear you when you tell them to try just
I'm typing it now if you'll carry on with the news.
Nicole, tell everybody what's going on while I go through the news. Okay, well, I guess one of the earliest things that we got out of air, it's New York Comic Con this weekend, so there's news and such. And I think one of the earliest pieces of news that we got out of it was the rather surprising announcement that Christopher Yost is going to be writing a Scarlet Spider ongoing.
Now, what the hell?
I know. We had these teases about something to do with the Scarlet Spider. We saw a teaser image of the hoodie burning, and that we talked about it last week. We saw the image of a Scarlet Spider in this .1 one-shot that's coming up next month. We'll talk about this week's Amazing Spider-Man later in the show, but I think the answer is probably contained within its pages as to the identity of this new Scarlet Spider.
Well, do we want to talk about it here then? I mean, that's a good enough spot to mention.
No, I think there's better segues.
Okay.
There.
We won't even talk about who we think it is then based on that issue, or we just want to...
Well, we'll bring it up later. There's a lot of news. Probably. That was the main thing that came out of the Spider-Man panel. Let's see, what else was announced? It's kind of all over the place. So we know that in the new year, this had been speculated earlier this week, but it's confirmed that Bendis and Mark Bagley will be, of course, as a tie-in with the launch of the Avengers film, will be doing a new Avengers series, number one, Avengers Assemble.
Huh. Mark Bagley, you say?
Yes, this is pertinent to my interests.
Cool.
Yes.
So how many Avengers books will we have then?
Oh my god, yes. Because there's something about, what's the teaser in New Avengers, that there's Dark Avengers are returning, where you're going to have Spider-Man's avenging.
That's just in New Avengers.
I hope so, because that would be...
That's just the storyline in New Avengers at the minute.
Because I need that.
I mean, the word is that Bendis is still going to be writing them all, but I can't believe he'll continue to write all three for forever. So maybe I'm a bad person, but I'm more interested in who would potentially replace Bendis on one of the other Avengers books. Because frankly, with the news that Rick Remender is replacing Warren Ellis, well, not replacing, but taking over Secret Avengers from Warren Ellis, I'm done. That's me in Secret Avengers. Nothing against Remender, but I just don't see him bringing anything to the book that will make me want to read it. You know,
the last issue of Warren Ellis wasn't nothing to talk about.
No, it wasn't either, was it? It was
a fantastic cover and just kind of an okay issue.
I mean, it was fine, but it wasn't underground Doom powered bomb platforms.
Mastery of the first issue, man, that was great.
It was announced this week that Ann Nocenti will be returning to comics and taking up Green Arrow after J.T. Crowley. Holy crap, talk about trading up.
Yeah.
Ann Nocenti, best known for her a very good run on Daredevil many years ago. That's another. There's all these creative news. That's another one. I don't think this one has actually been officially addressed at NYCC or confirmed, but it was flying around earlier this week that Gail Simone is leaving Firestorm.
Yeah, do we have any current news on that? Or
I haven't heard any word about it actually being touched upon at NYCC. So yeah,
I don't like that news.
No, I don't either. I think that'll be me and Firestorm when she goes, honestly, because I thought the first issue was uneven enough that I wouldn't trust it much further without her on it.
Did they say how many issues? Like, is she only going to like finish up?
No, it's a bit of it's just some news that was coming off of Bleeding Cool. It hasn't actually been officially addressed, but in this fast-paced world of social networking, frankly, I don't want to like jump to conclusions, but if it wasn't true, pretty sure Gail would have been refuting it on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think so.
Not good.
I don't like that.
No,
she's still
like
seeing a Batgirl, though, right?
I mean, all indications are that,
yes. What else? X-23 will be joining Avengers Academy.
Huh. Cool.
Yeah, I am apathetic towards this notion, but I'm completely off my face at the news that the Runaways are going to be dropping in for a guest.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Like, I heard about the Runaways are going to show up. That's kind of cool.
Kind of cool. That is Civilization. That is the book of the month.
Well, I didn't read Runaways. I wish I did, but I think that's kind of awesome hearing about that.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm just looking at the cover now as well. Lightspeed is going to be joining the Academy as well. That's Julie Power from Power Pack.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
Hey, they're getting those kids involved and stuff.
No, she's actually announced, like, Alex has joined the FF, but Julie's actually been floating around out there on her own, doing her own thing for a little while now. She was part of a Runaway story previously where she was part of a superhero self-help group, and they got their own miniseries. It was called The Loners. And no, The Loners. Was it The Losers? The Losers.
Wow.
The Losers was good.
Yeah, it was good. It was only a miniseries, but she was in that too. So she's been out there sort of doing things on her own for a while, you know, but just before Alex got all hoity-toity and joined up with the Fantastic Four. I'm trying to think now of any other news we got out of NYCC. Well, we heard about IDW's next crossover event.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Infestation 2. It's not zombies this time. This time it is the old ones from the Cthulhu mythos.
God, yeah, because that's relevant. Cthulhu? Remember Cthulhu? Yeah. That was cool about 4 years ago.
Cthulhu's always cool. Don't you
come on, yeah.
Them.
It was, okay, it was hip. Like
I got a friend that would buy a Cthulhu plushie any day of the year for the next 20 years.
Yeah. I think
a friend who has a room that says Shrine to Cthulhu.
In terms of current trend, which is more trendy, zombies or Cthulhu at this point?
Zombies.
Zombies are more. Okay, so
hey,
so we've moved down.
Dead premieres tonight.
Anyway, I think the most important. Oh, Walking Dead. Okay, so the most important bit of news.
I'm
going
to wait to support the British broadcast of The Walking Dead in a week's time, but we can still talk about the first episode.
See,
next
we should have a trade on that, right? We get Doctor Who same day. You should be getting Walking Dead same day. See, what's up
should
with that?
Not be getting Doctor Who on the same day. I don't know what is up with that. That is ridiculous to me.
Come on. Share.
Anyway, so the important part of this idea.
Something else I'm missing.
The infestation thing. The most important part. The universe for Transformers.
It's going to be Hearts of Steel. Yeah, it's not going to be the mainstream. That is pretty cool.
Was that the Mega, steam-powered train?
Yeah, the steam one. Okay. And Chuck Dixon's even coming back to write that. So I swear to God, Mark Twain had better be in it.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. Let's finish up with
Turtles. That makes sense, though, if they did the whole Cthulhu and Hearts of Steel, because that's pretty much when Cthulhu started, was back in that era. So
yeah, it's something.
H.G. Lovecraft.
Yeah,
and Chuck Dixon's come back to write that as well. He wrote the original Hearts of Steel mini as well. So I always felt that, you know, Hearts of Steel. I enjoyed Hearts of Steel except for the dumb ending. So I'll be interested to see what else they're able to do with it. And this is going to encompass more properties as well this time out. G.I. Joe's doing it again. Not Ghostbusters this time around though. Turtles is going to be part of it as well.
Yay!
hang on, I'm just pulling it up here. See what.
Best comic out there. People need to read it.
Let's see.
Yeah, I got the second printing of it.
Let's see. There's gonna be a 2-issue core miniseries like with the first Infestation. Then we got Chuck Dixon doing Transformers. There's gonna be Dungeons and Dragons, Turtles, G.I. Joe, and 30 Days of Night. There's going to be a team up one shot teaming up Archibald from IDW's Groom Lake series with Bat Boy from their weekly World News series.
Nice. This
is definitely bold, like crazy.
I'm gonna like it.
So let's, I guess, let's sum up the news with two quick items. I think we should mention one that I'll pull out, which is Patty Jenkins directing Thor 2. That was officially announced this week.
That's interesting.
What did she do? I'm not familiar with her.
Monster.
Monster with Charlize Theron. I never saw that film, but that shit won awards and all that.
Oh, yeah.
So definitely, you know, it's definitely another odd choice. But, you know, and I'm sad for the loss of Branagh, but basically, I kind of, like, I have faith that Marvel Studios is picking the right directors for the project lately.
Yeah.
No, I really can't. I can't, you know, well, it sounds like a bit of an odd choice, but...
Cool.
Let's... wait and see. I mean, I guess they know what they're doing. She's won awards and shit.
And Avengers trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Hell yes.
So, what did we think?
I hope the rest of the movie is as good as the trailer.
If we can't save the Earth, we'll damn well avenge it.
Yeah. am I the only person who was kind of like, eh? I mean, like, it looks like it's going to be a good movie, but I can't say that the trailer, like, really...
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't the most electrifying trailer. Okay. There was no big dramatic coach shot of all the heroes together.
That's why they call it a teaser.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It was only a teaser.
Oh, okay. I guess so, in that sense.
I mean, there's clearly a lot that's still being sat on. You know, Loki has himself an army, but we don't know what it is or where it's come from. And I know the intelligence speculation is favoring Skrulls at the minute.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
We'll have to wait and see. But Tom Hiddleston there, Loki in it up. All the personalities coming across very nicely, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like Downey Jr. steals the trailer. Like,
of course.
That's possible.
Only thing I'm knocking it is there's no Wasp. Where's my Wasp?
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Damn it.
Yeah,
my
it was.
Giant, where's my giant man? Damn it.
Yeah, you did kind of have
where's
that.
Where's my Nathan Fillion as giant man? God damn it.
Yes.
I think Nathan Fillion is entirely too manly a man to play Hank Pym.
Joss Whedon is directing this damn thing. Nathan Fillion needs to be in there somewhere.
I believe it was confirmed at NYCC that Nathan Fillion is going to be doing a voice on Transformers.
Yeah,
Ryan,
I think that was just announced. I think Yeah, so
we'll have that Firefly episode.
Yeah.
I just have Firefly joygasm there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that'll be that's what three spring. Firefly cast members on.
Well, and I thought they so that's, you know.
Oh, you missed out when I was watching the one where Arachnid and Breakdown were fighting. I'm like, yay, it's Firefly reunion.
But
quick, did you guess the last episode?
Oh, Prime. Oh, yeah.
Prime.
No.
Nope.
Don't.
I haven't seen it yet. So that's another show. That's another show. Okay. So Avengers trailer is good. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. I mean, like I said, I liked it. It just didn't, you know.
I wish Thor had his sleeves.
Yeah, I noticed that. They did take that.
I wish Thor had no clothes on.
I mean, well, that would be great too. But that's a different movie.
Apparently, I don't have to wish that Black Widow had no clothes on because that actually happened.
That guy's going to jail. They actually busted that guy. They actually finally caught that guy. So anyway, that's not cool. Don't steal people's naked pics.
I'm glad that they put all that time and money into capturing him instead of the drug dealers and the terrorists and all that.
Or the Wall Street bankers that have stolen all of our money. Yep. Okay. So, all right.
We're a political podcast.
I know. Yeah, we're going to move off of that, and we're going to actually talk about comics. So what do we got to review this week? Let's see. Chris Triplett, we'll start with you, sir.
Yes. I'm going to talk about Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 3. It's hard to say that. I keep wanting to call it Ultimate Spider-Man. But I haven't talked about...
Yeah.
I haven't talked about any of the new Ultimate Spider-Man since we got our new bold new directions. I felt like I needed to at least kind of touch base on it. There's like not much that's like happened really in this issue. I mean, there's stuff that's going on in it, but it's basic Bendis, storytelling. This is issue 3 of what, like maybe like a 6-issue story or something.
Probably.
I'm assuming it's going to go to 6 issues.
He basically pulled out his notes for the original Spider-Man, and
the things have started to diverge.
Yeah.
I mean, because like
I still think the best moment we've had out of the first 3 issues so far was the end of issue 2, where Miles hangs himself off the ceiling, and it's just a total copy image of a panel from, I think it was the last page of Ultimate Spider-Man number 1. Peter's hanging off the ceiling, and he goes, "Cool," and I've completely forgotten. Miles is hanging off the ceiling, and goes, "Oh no."
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the wonderful core difference at the heart, that we're not just getting like Peter Parker again. It's not somebody who thinks, powers, I can make money off these powers. Yeah. The journey to hero is quite a different one.
Yeah. I like these characters. It's different enough that I like it. Like you were saying, Peter Parker's like instantly, he's like awesome, Miles is totally different. Miles, he's totally a different character. He's all about, I need to, work hard and get a good education. This is just something that's kind of getting him away. Whereas, his best friend, is like, guy, you're awesome. I want to go over to your uncle's house and get bit by a spider so I can beat you.
Yeah, I was like, if you're not going to do this, and I am.
So, they basically, he's dealing with that. He gets to go on a little adventure in the issue. He saves some people from a burning building. He kind of doesn't want to do it, but... his friend sort of talks him into it. It's like, you kind of got to do it, without saying the whole, great power, great responsibility thing. You still sort of get that, because he runs into this burning building and he saves these people in very comedic fashion.
Well, yeah, saves is sort of a relative term, since he sort of just throws the chick out of the window inadvertently.
Well, he grabs her and she kind of fights him and she falls out. And for a minute, I thought, God, is she gonna like die?
Yeah. I know that like that's gonna suck.
But she lands on something. I guess it's one of those cushions that they put out.
Yeah.
But then you get that great moment where like he goes back into the burning building and you're thinking, well, why did he get back in? And is he gonna be okay? And then he saves a little girl. And you get this very heroic moment where he lands and he hands a little girl off to a cop, and it's awesome. I mean, I like it's slow progress,
mm-hmm.
getting to him, because like in Ultimate Spider-Man he's not been Spider-Man at all, even though he showed up as Spider-Man in what was that comic called?
Fallout. Yeah. Well, this has all been kind of backtracked
before that. Yeah,
but we're getting like the build up to why he becomes Spider-Man. Why does he do it? Because, during this story, Peter Parker's still alive. He's still Spider-Man. It's some time before he's died. But as the story progresses, and he's, Miles is going and doing his school, his thing that he got into, his lottery that he did. we get kind of an idea of where we're at story-wise at the end of the issue, which I thought was kind of neat. We find out that the events of the whole, you know, return of the Sinister Six and all that stuff with the Ultimate Avengers is happening on the bridge at the end of the issue, and we find out that Spidey's been shot. We don't know he's dead. You know, he hasn't died yet, but we know where we're at now story-wise, and I thought that was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. You see the shock on his face.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the last page, just the shock on his face, because, you know, they announces Spider-Man has been shot. And it's almost like he's looking towards his destiny.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. He's afraid of it, you know?
There it's can like, only be one.
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, you go back to, like, this moment when he rescues the girl and then jumps away from the fire department, immediately runs into an alleyway and tosses his cookies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you know?
That's cool. Sick.
It's very... I think it's very honest in that respect. Like, it's very sort of realistic. You know, I mean, this is a kid that is very well aware of, I think, maybe the hardships of life and reality and, you know, those kinds of things. When you see, a lot of times when you see a character, especially this age, like even Peter, there's that feeling of invincibility. And they would be more like this other kid where it's like, oh, I've got these powers, I can do all this cool stuff. Yeah. And that's totally not Miles. I mean, he's definitely trying to, you know, do better things with his life.
Yeah, he even has that nightmare with Electro coming into his bedroom and killing him. You know, and yeah, I mean, it's like he's terrified of the responsibility. But you know, we know it's coming because we know he's already debuted as Spider-Man. It's kind of interesting to see the progress to that, and I'm
well, maybe that's the other side of it, you know. Yeah. the side that we've always seen with Peter, when great power comes great responsibility, we've always seen that side where it's like Peter was too eager to use his power for money or gain or whatever, whereas on this side of it, it's still that power comes responsibility, but it's more on the side of Miles wants to shrug it off, hide it, disregard it, and it's like, no, you have this power, you need to use it to help people, not, you know. So it's like the other side of that coin, but the same thing. And so it's very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for all the concern that we had I guess most people were probably just a little bit too caught up in the whole controversy that bursts out of it to really stop and think about what a new person being Spider-Man really meant. And there's always the concern that we could have just had Peter Parker Light, a whole lot of things. I think we were saying, even off the back of the first issue, we were worried about the continued breathing of his parents. But I don't think we have anything to worry about on that front now, because this is just showing us how the completely different path to the same goal that Miles is going to be walking, and it's not going to take, because he doesn't have to be convinced by a death the way that Peter will, you know. Even though Miles's pact of non-interference could potentially lead to much more fatal circumstances than Peter's willingness to use his powers did, I just don't think we'll have to worry too much about that. No, I mean, and I love the fact this school seems like a breeding ground for supervillains as well.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I noticed that.
Yeah.
Is this guy Judge going to be the first supervillain?
Good question.
I want to see a load of late 1980s Bill Mantlo and then early 90s crappy Spider-Man villains be Miles' villains, ultimate versions of them. Guys that they never got around to ultimizing the first time out. Let's ultimize them and let them be Miles' bad guys.
Oh, yes.
What's up with his friend asking him if he has superpowers too? You know what I mean? I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, the friend's not very good on the DL kind of stuff.
The guy just, my name is Judge. He doesn't answer the superpower thing. He just ignores it. But yeah, I liked it. It was good.
It's good. I'm
looking forward to it.
You know, we talked about, you know, when we got into this, that, you know, Amazing, it's like, why do we need Ultimate if Amazing is good? But they're both good in very different ways.
Well, the fact, I mean, it's a different character now.
Yeah, you know, and that's the whole thing.
This is truly the answer to that question.
I think it justifies it more now that it's a different character. I mean, because when it was Peter Parker, it was still good, and it was still a different take on Peter Parker, but it still was basically the same. Yeah. I like this, having something else to go with. You know, I got my Amazing, now I got my Ultimate.
And now we can have a crossover between the regular Mighty Morphin and the Ultimate and have both of these.
Mighty 2099, God, that would be awesome.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
How long before we get to meet 616 Miles Morales?
Oh, man, that's a good question.
Just a completely no pyres guy he bumps into on a club or in a street or something one day.
That's a great idea, though. That, yeah, there you go. Yeah,
that's right up Dan's slide.
Fanboy Versus, full of ideas for you. Creators should be listening to the show.
Because the world needs more Spider-Man.
That's right. There is not enough. I mean, it's not like they're coming out with more Spider-Man titles.
Avenging Spider-Man.
Yeah. So,
Scarlet Spider.
Does Spider Island come out at least one, like some kind of spinoff of Spider Island come off like at least once or twice a week?
Yeah.
There's a new
one. Well, next to none of those have Spider-Man in them, though.
Yeah. Hey, that's a quality idea.
That's true.
So, no, Spider Island's been really good. So.
Oh, yeah.
I got to wait for it to come out on trade somehow because I'm so lost. It sounds really good, though. It sounds awesome, but.
So. Okay, cool.
Well, I'll tell you what would make a neat segue then between talking about Ultimate Spider-Man and before we move over to Nicole's book would be to just touch very briefly upon Amazing Spider-Man.
You
want to
talk about Amazing? Okay, let's talk about Amazing real quick.
Well, we'll see how it leads in a moment.
I wonder if we want to go into a full review
right.
of this.
The world does need more Spider-Man, and we're giving it to you.
That's right.
So
we're on part 5 here. We've got 3 left.
Yeah, everything's really hitting the fan.
Oh,
it's
man.
Like, I think, in a sense, the comic is becoming a little more and more chaotic with each passing issue. Not in a bad way.
No, there's just so much going on, but
really
it's great.
Jockeying for space in this.
I don't know. We definitely have. Smythe isn't dead, but he's not in good shape.
We basically got 3 big events.
Yeah.
And the first is that we find out who number 6 is.
Ha
ha! And that was me, you know, we were guessing, we heard Reed Richards say it was an expert in Parker DNA. All the fans started guessing people to do with the Clone Saga, Sewer Trainer, Ben Reilly, whatever. I thought it was supposed to be Tyler Stone from when he appeared earlier. I was just confused and wasn't understanding things properly. And we find out in this issue, spoilers, we find out that it's Morbius.
Hell yes!
Morbius! Who saw that coming? I did not see anybody guess Morbius.
But here's the great thing.
And, because I love Morbius. I do. Yeah. I love him.
But it's so funny, like the way that Slott is able to do this stuff. There's been all of this, you know, lead up, this secret about who Six is, and you get the reveal in this issue that's totally like part of one page, you know. But there's way more important things going on in the story.
It's
so
not
like
somebody
it's just,
kicked the door
it's
in
not
and
the
went,
last
Phew.
Page. It's not the last page spoiler. Like he takes
no.
the mask off. It's just this side panel.
Yeah,
that's awesome. How he does
just, you don't even actually see him properly.
No, you just see his hand
you
and his name
shadow.
And part of him. Yeah.
You just see enough of him that you know it's him. I mean, any Spider-Man fan will know that's Morbius. Look at him. Oh, my God.
But it's,
and, of course, he's an expert in Parker DNA because he got his powers when he was experimenting with Spider-Man.
Yeah. But it's just amazing how Slott just does that. It's just, he'll have this important reveal that he throws in, and it just ups the oh shit factor, but you're totally on to other stuff because there's way more important things going on. So it's like, well, that's cool, but in this other place, other more important things are happening for this particular story, so we'll have to deal with that later.
Yeah.
Because, of course, none of the characters know this. This is just something that's a complete reveal for the audience, so...
Spidey has to find out later.
Yeah.
And Morbius has used anti-venom symbiote to create a cure. And the only recipient of that cure in this issue is Kane, who gets dunked in it and comes out looking good.
But they
looks normal again.
But they did make note that he still has his spider powers.
Yep. So, Scarlet Spider, anybody?
Yeah,
I think so.
I think the mystery has been solved.
There you go.
But you never know. I mean, they might throw a curveball.
Yeah, sure. It's possible. But I think are you going on Spider Sense here, or what's the
other
one?
Yeah, that was the other one. Spidey gets the Spider Sense back.
Yeah,
he gets like a super
which is
Spider Sense,
which is good and bad.
He becomes Spider Kung Fu Sense now.
Yeah, well, because he had had all of the martial arts training. Well, and what's funny is this all comes back to Madame Web, because she, you know, appeared to the Brainiacs here and said, "Hey, you're blocking our powers. Stop it. Why don't you?"
Specifically, the Spider Sense jammer tires are blocking her psychic abilities.
Right.
And she needs them turned off so she can figure out what to do next. But when she does it, it turns out she actually winds up boosting the Queen's powers.
Yeah. So it boosted her powers, the Queen's powers, and Spider-Man
nice
got
job,
his.
Nice job, Julia.
Way to go.
Yeah.
See?
Way to break it.
Yeah, you tried to interfere, and now you screwed the whole thing up. And
maybe the jackal died again.
Yeah, and the jackal died again.
How much you want to guess? It's a clone.
Oh, yeah, it's a clone. Yeah, it's a clone.
Easily done. It's a clone.
He's like Doctor Doom. He's got so many like clones. It's like, but this is good stuff. I mean, if you didn't, why not? Yeah, definitely pick up the trade if you didn't, because it's just Amazing's good. Spider Island's just good.
But I love all the little moments.
No, I'm sad I'm missing out on it.
Yeah, you really are.
One of my favorite little moments in here is whenever Spidey swings past Gravity and Firestar. And I don't know if it's... I think it's a pretty good-natured little jab, but I think Slott is having a bit of a jab at young allies and their recent appearances as young heroes struggling to make it. And Firestar goes, "We're not rookies. I've been a new warrior. I was an Avenger before you." Protector of the friggin' universe. Okay, carry on.
Yeah. All right, yeah, yeah, it's cool, it's cool, it's okay. It's all. I'm gonna be. Yeah, that was a great little moment.
Like Slott pays attention and gets this.
Yeah.
I even like the stuff with Mary Jane where she's like, now I get the whole power and responsibility thing when she's like kicking spiders' asses.
Yep.
You know, at the beginning, I mean, it's good. It's good. Like every Amazing Spider-Man's good. Just buy it. Just buy it.
Yeah. Should be buying this. So,
what time?
Anyway, cool.
Only one part left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. One part in an epilogue.
Yeah, one part in epilogue. So yeah, we've got two more after this. So yep.
So two more legs, right?
Two more legs.
Yeah.
So okay, on to then Nicole.
Okay, well, you know, it's Halloween month, and so Marvel is pulling out a classic favorite of mine. They're coming out with Legion of Monsters, number 1 of 4. Yay!
Yay.
It's a tie-in because Morbius is in this. Yay!
Yay.
Imagine that. This was a really good introductory issue if you have no idea who these guys are.
Yeah.
They haven't been in anything for a long time, and all of a sudden, there's a little thing here and there about them.
Yeah,
so,
they've been creeping up here and there. Like the idea of the monsters as an underground society came out of all places, out of the Punisher.
Oh, really?
Franken Castle storyline basically established that someone was hunting Marvel's monsters, and they had all banded together in the catacombs under the earth. And Morbius put after Punisher got chopped to bits by Dickhead, Morbius stitched him back together to serve as a guy who would hunt down the guy who was hunting the monsters. And they have stuck together now, and the basic shtick is that they're a monster civilization that is policing its own problem. They're policing the world's monster problem.
And that's where this starts off with. There is a monster that's gone all apeshit, let's just say. and he's come above ground, and he's causing a commotion in a little English town, so and where he's attacking teenagers, mostly female teenagers, but the town's so small they're running out of
like
teenagers.
Like every good monster does.
Yeah.
But the monster's really cool. I don't know what this monster's called, but
I don't think it's anything in particular.
Yeah, he's just got a lot of teeth. His head is a bunch of teeth, and so he's basically tearing these teenagers. A new one, thing. Basically.
let's call him Ted. Ted for
the Ted the Monster.
Ted Monster. Ted the cheating monster. There you go. Well, he runs into who we come to see our heroine, and she's not going to take no shit from him. She shows him who's boss. Her name is Elsa Bloodstone. Now, I'm not familiar with that name. I'm not sure if she's been around.
She has, yes.
Sounds familiar.
Elsa Bloodstone was a a character from Marvel Black and White magazines in the 70s, I want to say. He was a caveman who got a chunk of alien jewel embedded in his chest, and he became an immortal monster hunter. And, like, in the 90s, they retroactively said that a lot of the generic square-jawed heroes from, like, Tales to Astonish and all those guys who beat those one-shot monsters were really him under false names, things like that. And they did mini-series.
Was Bloodstone in that New Avengers, the 50s Avengers story? Was
he was in the 50s Avengers story.
That's right. That's where I knew that name from.
Well, they did a mini-series in the early 2000s. Might have been 2000. I think it was around 2000. It was very Buffy-like, frankly. But it turned out he'd had a daughter at some point in his long life. She was Elsa Bloodstone, and she hunted monsters. And she just appeared in this one miniseries, but then Warren Ellis got his hands on her for Next Wave and turned her into this gun-toting, take-no-guff Brit chick.
Yeah.
And if you haven't read Next Wave, by the way, Jesus Christ, read it. It was only 12 issues long. It's fantastic.
Because I didn't recognize the name. I recognized the last name. I'm like, I know Bloodstone was in something,
well, this
but I don't...
this is very much Ellis's version of the character.
Yeah. So yeah. So she's. I mean. So she basically goes and she hunts the creature down, and that's how we are. Goes into the portal to the underground world, into the monster metropolis, where we are finally introduced to all the other monsters. And again, if you don't know any of these characters, just within a few panels, you know who they are. You know their attitude. You know their name. It's a very good introduction issue. We are missing a few key characters, but you'll recognize on someone else's review later on why that is. So basically, they're investigating her, why she has killed this creature. And basically, that is... I don't want to give a whole lot away, is the thing. It's a good first issue. It's a good introductory issue. Said, if you've never heard of these creatures or these characters, it's a great way to start off Legion of Monsters. So.
It's very much the obligatory, the heroes have a bit of a fight over a disagreement, and then they realize they must team up to defeat the greater evil.
And it's got some great humor in here. I was laughing at some of the... Oh, there was one I cracked up loud. I was like, oh my gosh, that was so funny.
And I knew it would.
It can be a little graphic. There is some blood in here. Nothing that, you know, you'll lose your lunch over, but it is rated Teen Plus, so just a little heads up on that.
Really just for the visuals, though. There's nothing, like, it's just Morbius is performing an autopsy on the monster that Elsa killed.
Yeah.
So that's basically all it is, you know. There's nothing too grotesque going on here, but it's also very stylized. I mean, frankly, like, I bought this. I don't know who the writer is. I don't know who the artist is. The writer is Dennis Hopeless, and the artist was, His name was Juan Doe, was the artist's name. Yes. I don't know the creative team. I like the idea of the characters, but frankly, I bought it based on seeing the cover in previews and the premise, because it's fantastically stylized art. I love it.
Yeah, I personally have liked Legion of Monsters before, and of course, I'm a sucker for anything monsters, and so it's like, this is for me, and... Honestly, it was a great first issue. So,
was it a Spider Island tie-in? I mean, was it part of the whole... No? Okay. It sounded kind of like it did, because you mentioned Morbius and everything.
Well, I mean, the Manfibian just comments that Morbius... Yeah. I think you might be physically incapable of timeliness. It's just that Morbius has been busy elsewhere. You know, you could literally believe that he went down that hatch in this week's issue of Amazing Spider-Man and came down to... do what is in this issue, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, they've got all these different kind of monsters in the background. The background artwork, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool, that's cool. I hope they use him. And so, yeah. If you're a fan
It is actively beyond my knowledge over whether any or not of these are pre-existing Marvel monsters. They don't look it to me. I mean, the main stars are Morbius.
No, I didn't recognize any in the background, any of the background ones.
Morbius, Manfibian, the Living Mummy, and the Werewolf by Night are all pre-existing Marvel characters. So there are, and they've been. I mean, they popped her up here and there. Like, they were in the Punisher before, and some of them were in the very very short-lived Nick Fury's Howling Commandos miniseries, like, well, it was about 6 years ago. They've been in and out, but they have this new premise now, and this is where it's going from.
The last page was so freaking funny.
Yeah.
It says to be continued. You're like, oh man.
I mean, it's always hard to ape Warren Ellis, but Hopeless does a very good job here of getting down the tone.
How would you like to have that last name?
I know it's not a great one, is it? But he does a good job of getting down Elsa's, like, snippy Britishness. You know, what is that one line she says? Morbius says, "Do you mind if I give your prisoner a quick check? He doesn't look so good." "Fine, I've no quarrel with you lot, apart from a lifelong belief that you're all inherently evil and should very much die in a fire."
Die in a fire, yes.
That's awesome.
I think the champion joke about Elsa from Ellis's next wave was she was very much being played as the British chick. It was very much her thing. And in one issue, she had like a t-shirt on with a Euro sign on it. And what was it like? She was it was a parody of the Ultimates. Like she was told to I'm forgetting that. I'm ruining the joke now. But she's told to like attack randomly, kill, dive straight in, and she goes, "What? What? What do you think this letter on my chest stands for? America?"
No, it was really good. Oh, and I just want to do a little quick 30-second mention of the Ghostbusters comic book. If you are a Doctor Who fan, you need to pick this up because they investigate a house that is being haunted by the TARDIS effect. And there's a little bit of Doctor Who-iness in it, so
that works. Tie in with the other books. That's very good.
Yeah, so, oh, it's awesome. Especially if you've watched this last season, there's some little hints here and there. So, I just wanted to mention that. If you're a Doctor Who fan, you need to go pick up Ghostbusters.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. And that is it for me.
Awesome. Okay, so, that takes it to me then. Ghost Rider. Fear Itself. I think this should be the last. Fear Itself is almost over, isn't it?
Fear Itself.
I think there's one issue.
There's one issue left.
And guess what?
Week.
I am so far behind. I have no idea what's going on.
I don't even care about Fear Itself.
Nothing's going
on.
I'm pretty sure
you could just sort of go from where you are now and read the last issue next week, and you would be fine.
Assuming I want to read it.
I just hope something happens in the last issue, but don't just kill somebody off and be like, okay, well, that's what this was all about. Cause I don't want that. I want something.
No, that already
else.
Happened. We killed Bucky.
do something else. I mean,
that was the important bit. So,
we're gonna have to talk about it next week.
Yeah, I know. I'll pick it up.
You're actually going to have to talk about it though.
So, Ghost Rider, this is issue 4. I'm assuming this would have been the end of the mini, but it looks like the series is actually going to continue onward.
I think it was ever solicited as a mini, wasn't it?
I don't think so, but it feels like this would have been the end of it. But this is definitely the end of the...
felt like a mini. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying
this. Yeah. No. But it's definitely moving on from this point. We get the resolution of this Adam story. Adam was the guy that took Johnny's powers and then put it into Alejandra. We find out that his plan had been sort of a parallel plan, I guess, of the Serpent. He's taken Alejandra up to, I think, Skylab meets Hubble. It's like a big space station with Hubble stuck on it. And what he's going to do is swing it around, point the lens at the Earth, and then focus her penance fire through the lens and burn all of the sin out of the Earth.
Okay, wow, she's going to kill everybody.
Cool. Yeah, which would turn everybody into, like, drooling zombies. Yes.
Yeah. Or like zombies!
That's kind of a crazy idea, huh? And, you know, so, because Adam feels guilty for having brought sin to the world, so that's his thing. Because
Is this Adam?
This is the biblical Adam. This is Adam Adam.
Oh!
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so... Wow, so that's his whole deal. So that he
wait, does it also involve Michael Knight?
No.
Archangels.
No. But hot on their trail is Johnny Blaze, who's trying to stop all this. There's a couple of there's one really great moment in here where Johnny basically kicks down the doors to the bar or wherever Morpheus is. I guess he goes into hell. And or Mephisto, and he wants Mephisto to give him a, get this, kids, a flaming motorcycle rocket ship. Because he's trying to get up to the satellite thing.
And Mephisto says, so you ready to sell your soul for that?
Yes, he does. That's exactly what he says. He's like, well, then you got a sign.
You got a sign.
there's a great back and forth where Johnny's like, you don't want this guy to win either. He's like, yeah, I know, but I really want something for this, you know? And it's like, how responsible do you feel, Johnny, for all this happening? I mean, you gave up the Ghost Rider and gave it to Adam, and so really, this is all sort of your fault. How important is it to you that you fix this problem? And then the next panel is him blasting off on his rocket fire motorcycle thing. It's awesome! And he takes his zombie buddy with him. But then decides that the zombie guy basically has his own agenda with Ghost Rider and ejects him into space. But looks like there's a force field, so that guy might be okay. His last question before he disappears off in the horizon as they're launching into space is, is there a parachute on this? So anyway, Johnny full rockets blasts into this satellite. And basically the rest of this is just a fight between Johnny, Adam, and Alejandra Ghost Rider. She's sort of being controlled for most of this, where Adam's sort of pumping up her penance fire in order to unleash it on the world. But ultimately Adam's downfall is he starts to talk. And starts talking about how important it is to him that he does this because he feels...
starts monologuing.
Yeah.
That's what the villain does.
Because he feels responsible for having brought sin to the world and his original sin. And that's the part that Ghost Rider sort of latches onto. Like, oh, you brought sin. The original sin. Let me burn that out of you. And basically disintegrates Adam. And blows up the satellite. But she escapes by putting Johnny in the rocket motorcycle thing and then guiding it back to Earth, which is awesome.
Okay.
So, So ultimately Johnny offers to be her, her mentor and try to guide her. And she's like, you know what? You're just trying to control me. And Adam was trying to control me. I've been controlled my whole life. I've got the Ghost Rider. I know what the hell to do, so get the fuck out. And goes off on her own, which is great. Good stuff. Unfortunately, so there's a couple of good things. I mean, for one, yes, yay, we've got a female Ghost Rider. And hopefully we're finally going to get stories that focus on her. The only downside is that most of this series has focused on Johnny. So I don't...
Like, from the description, it kind of sounded like, you know, she was going to, like, something was going to happen to her, and he was going to sort of like accept that he is Ghost Rider and get it back in time for the movie that's coming out.
It does seem like
they want to draw attention to that one. Yeah, that needs promotion.
It does seem like that may have been the intention. It does seem like that's probably where they were planning on going, and for some reason, editorially, they've decided to go in this other direction. So I wouldn't be surprised to see her be Ghost Rider. Up until we get... When is the movie? Movie's not out until next
February,
year,
February,
right?
I don't actually even know.
Yeah.
I think February. I think it's going to get the February-March area release.
I
don't care.
Yeah, I know. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see her being Ghost Rider for a few more months, and then right around movie time see Johnny come back. But all indications of this is that she's going to hang out and be Ghost Rider for a while, so I'm all for that.
How does a skeleton have boobies?
They're flaming boobies. We've already talked about this.
There are flaming boobies.
Okay.
I know. We already had this discussion. I remember
it shows you the tone of this show. Man.
Yeah, I know, but
it's called catting. It's called. Have you ever worn a catcher's, uniform? That's kind of like how it is. It's padding. There you go.
Yeah, the artist
padding
here.
Up. There's just all bone and fire.
Yeah, I know, and the fire is filling out. I guess.
It's
really odd because it really draws point. You know, typically Ghost Rider is always drawn as a skeleton with fire around the skeleton part, but they definitely have sort of drawn in more fleshy looking fire to achieve a cleavage like effect.
I think it would honestly be better
if it was. They have it further unzipped. I think it would be a better effect. You could still have breasts, and just have it zipped up further, and it would make more sense. But,
Fewer questions, anyway.
Trying
to hide the identity of her. I thought it would be a good idea if you just didn't know, because it just looks like generic skeleton on a motorcycle. I wonder who it is. It could be anybody. It's not a girl. Oh, it is a girl. Oh, my God.
But in the previous panel here, it looks like she shuffled off some of her cool arm armor and stuff, but that seems to be on the art for the next comic, so I don't know where that's gonna go. But hey, it's fun, it's good, it's well written, the art's nice. As far as the story,
who's the artist on this one?
That would be Clark, is that who that? Matthew Clark. So Rob Williams is penciling, and Matthew Clark as well.
Matthew Clark. Hi, Tommy.
Aren't you telling us?
So the real question is, are you going to keep getting it, JD?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is on my poll. You know, I'm a sucker for Ghost Rider, and if it's good, I'm going to definitely stay on it. It's not,
to get it. I got the first two issues, and I just thought, there's so much other stuff I want to get. I'm just going
to
pass.
I'm not even paying attention to that. I'm just buying stuff. I had the time to read it. But it's good stuff. I recommend it, especially going into the next issue now that this whole Fear Itself element has been resolved. Hopefully we're going to get a little more focus on our new Ghost Rider character.
That happened with Alpha Flight this week as well, too, and it's not like you could tell the difference.
True, but that was... that sort of has that feeling of it being, like, trying to be its own thing. But Alpha Flight was good, too.
Yes, it will.
So.
Did Puck come back yet?
Taskmaster.
Yep. Yeah, he's
Puck
been back.
Came back in like the second issue.
Yeah, he's been back for a couple issues. Taskmaster was there.
Taskmaster was in this week's issue.
Yeah.
Sasquatch is not able to be
Taskmaster. Yeah, he's depowered
at
the moment.
He's stuck in human form.
But. Yeah. But no, that's been good. That was actually really interesting. Especially the ending for Alpha Flight this week. So.
And Taskmaster was in it.
Yay.
Fred Von Lente writing the Taskmaster again.
Yes.
Yay.
Awesome.
But it seemed like there was a little bit of difference to it, so I don't know what that was. But it was, anyway. Yeah. Whatever. So, anyway, okay, there we go. That's me. On to then you, sir, Chris.
This week I am talking about something a little different. I am talking about The Unexpected, which is a new anthology, came out from Vertigo this week. You might remember a couple of months ago I talked about the Strange Adventures anthology that Vertigo put out.
The Unexpected is the name, not... You're not talking about something.
Yes, no, that's actually the title.
I was confused for a second there. I was like, well, what is it? It is. Like, don't keep us in suspense. Tell us what it is.
That is, it's a collection of short stories. It's mostly like the overriding theme is about like the collapse of society. A lot of post-apocalyptic types or tales about when stories after life ends or stories after civilization ends, that type of story. I'll just give a quick rundown of what's in here. The first one is the one that actually breaks the theme, so it doesn't get off to a great start. It is called The Great Carlini, and it's written and drawn by Dave Gibbons. And it's the story of I don't even know how to describe him. An orphan, yeah, a guy on the street, a homeless guy, a grifter. I'll call him a grifter, who from foreign lands, who grifts his way into America and becomes the assistant to a magician and eventually takes over his act, but then meets an ironic end. I think my favorite strip in the issue was this is one of those ones where the title is at the end. It was called Dogs. And it's a story by G. Willow Wilson. And it's like, it starts out like kind of weird, and I couldn't quite penetrate the prose at first. And the third page was just really strange looking. But like, the more I read it, like, it's only everything in here is like 7 or 8 pages long. You know, so this is an 80 page one shot, virtually no ads. And it's got 9 short stories in it. So and it does bear an $8 price tag. So, you're getting what you pay for. Yeah, but look how thick.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, you could hit somebody with that.
For those that can't see that in our audio audience, it was thick.
It was quite thick.
It's quite thick.
That's so, what she said.
Whoa.
Fine, it wasn't any of them male people on the podcast that said that.
Yeah.
Dogs by G. Willow Wilson with art by Robbie Rodriguez. It's a story of how a dog leads police officers to the body of a little girl in the woods in a little town, just a little small town. But the story like quickly unfolds in short order, obviously, because it's an 8-page story, in which it turns out that this child was the daughter of like an abusive father, and the whole town knew it. But nobody would ever, nobody would ever go over there. They would say, oh, if it gets any worse, I'll go over there. Nobody ever would. And this dog was the one who came out too late, you know. And then this dog pulls itself up onto its hind legs and just leans on the police station window and looks in. And all across town, dogs start reacting badly. And all across town, dogs start standing up and forcing humans out of their homes. And it's surprisingly hot. It's kind of, it's like in the wrong hands. Like it could have turned out like really silly. You know, I mean, where's this strip? You know, it's all told from the first person narration perspective of a police officer. You know. Next day, Gene Hofstadt's Big Pit decided it was tired of being tied up on the front lawn and beaten. So it calmly walked up to the porch steps, unlatched the screen door, dragged Gene into the yard, and mauled him to death.
Oh my God!
And there was the black. I know, right? And then there was the black lab at the Stedman house. Mr. and Mrs. Stedman liked to get drunk. Her baby had a lot of unexplained cuts and falls. Guess the dog decided she was the better mama. Down at the docks, Matt and Brady Jorgensen were found strangled in their own nets. Used to use the stray mutts who hung around the fishing boats as target practice with their BB guns. The dogs of West Bay had become fishers of men. And it leads to this rather chilling punchline almost that I don't want to blow. I think it's my favorite one out of the book. It's got such a bizarre premise, you know, but it's really about the collapse of society. The next one is it's called Look Alive by Alex Grecian. It's quite good. And this one is perhaps most notable for the art being done by Jill Thompson, who did the Scary Godmother storybooks. You may have heard of those children's storybooks, mm-hmm. Scary God. Basically, it's the zombie apocalypse has happened. And there's just this one girl zombie who, she wants brains. You know, but she's also got to find herself a good man. So she goes to the lengths of... She puts on the makeup, covers the undead complexion, gets the wig on there, makes sure she looks proper and desirable, and, you know, just goes and eats her way through all the women. And it's her chances of finding a good man.
Wow.
The Land by Joshua Dice with art by Farrell Dalrymple. Now, I know Farrell Dalrymple from when his rather unusual Marvel miniseries from a couple of years back, Omega the Unknown, tells the story of a Mexican ranch hand at an old man's farm. When the old man's son is found dead, he gets the blame. And he knows that he knows like the inevitability of what is going to come because... But in his, you know, it's a very straightforward Mexican stagehand gets blamed for killing a young boy when really, you know, it's an Aztec demon that's broken its land borders.
It's always an Aztec demon.
Yeah. It's always.
You know, it's very much, it's like he knows there's something has come up from over, but it doesn't matter anymore. It's about it's a story. It's a little bit about racial identity as well. You know, what does he say here? You know, I have tended this man's livestock and land for 30 years. I have seen his grandchild grow from nothing to something and sadly become nothing again. But I can see now that none of that matters. He is quick to suspect me. He will not defend me. I am not his friend. I am not his ranch hand. I am his Mexican, and I will hang by the first chill of fall.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. But there's one, he's the one that finds the body, and it's covered by black moths. You know, it's real. It's the black witch moths cover him like a shroud. I know why the moths come. My wife told me about them once. You know, it's pretty good. Perhaps the real comedy strip in the one is trying to find the credits again. A Most Delicious Monster by Jeffrey Rotter, with art by Lelo Bonacorso. Let me put it to you this way: the first sentence, the first narrative caption in the story is, "When we resurrected the Neanderthal using fossil DNA, we knew it would never be fit to live among us."
Oh, how could that go wrong?
Scientists have resurrected the Neanderthal, but he's actually been turned into like a nature preserve / theme park where people come to see the Neanderthal and ride the rides and everything. But there's a load of bleeding heart liberals who want like free the caveman. Not all Neanderthals aren't cavemen. No genetic colonialism.
It's like Neanderthal Park, so you got to feed it a goat or something, and right. You got to run. When you see the water shake, you got to run.
Doof.
It's the story of a scientist who tries to find the evidence to disprove what the bleeding hearts are saying. So it's actually a really interesting like study of that. You know, he shows him slides. He shows the caveman a picture of itself. And, you know, he's given the caveman, a sci-fi colander with knobs on so that he can communicate with it, you know. And he shows the picture of caveman of itself, and the caveman says, "No disrespect, but a picture is not me." "Well, all right, if that isn't Hook," because that's the caveman's name, "Hook, what is Hook?" "Hook is the tool a hand must grasp. Hook is the bloody flesh for knowing. Hook is the water to be drunk, the foul weather to escape, the woman for loving." Like, the caveman is completely defined. He sees himself as a collection of his own desires, not as an individual. An image of him is not him because it simply isn't. You know, it's really quite interesting. Hmm. But then it has a great punchline as well. I'm not going to spoil him.
Trying to get us to buy this $8 book, aren't you?
Yes.
I recommend that. You know, there are, you know, there is maybe one, like, honestly, story I could say, maybe one or two stories I would say I had no interest in, which is a much higher hit to miss ratio than Strange Adventures had, definitely. You know, this one's definitely worth it much more than Strange Adventures was. Family First is a pretty straightforward one. There's tales of post-apocalyptic teenagers left on their own. Then some big guy with guns comes calling, and it's got your pretty straightforward Outer Limits Twilight Zone style twist ending, you know. There's one here called Alone, which is written by Joshua Hale Fialkov with art by Rasan Ekedal. That's probably one of the misses, honestly. It's actually just Beetlejuice without Beetlejuice. guy goes over a cliff, returns as a ghost to his own home, and can't leave, and is forced to watch what his wife does then whenever he
watch
leaves.
Out for
whenever
the sandworms.
That's exactly it. You know, he can't leave the house. Absolutely, whatever. Here, now, one that I was quite looking forward to is, it's called Americana, and it's written by Brian Wood, who I know him mainly from a series called Demo, which was like a series of short anthology type stories. And the art on this is by Emily Carroll, who I had never heard of until approximately 5 days before the comic came out. When CBR this month for Halloween is running a featurette called The Scariest Comics Ever. And they posted a link to one of her, she does a lot of cartoons and comics on the web. And they posted a link to one of hers called, you should go and look this up. It's called His Face All Red. And it's the tale of two brothers. And I thought it was quite creepy. And it's an online comic, but it's not like three panels like a web comic. They're all quite long. They're set out like comic book pages, but they're quite long. And towards the end of the story, like the length of it is used to really, really fantastic effect. Strongly recommended. His Face All Red. Go check it out. So she's drawing this story, and it starts in 2012 with the supposed end of the world. Hey, there we go. Contemporary. And it's the story of a 6-year-old girl But then, you know, hey, what? The world doesn't end, and we jump through 2050, 2080, all the way up to the year 2100, following the life of this girl as she grows old in a world, in the world after civilization. You know, it's not horrific. It's not a horror story. There's no twist to it. It's just quite a soft, gentle story about trying to find life in a world where just the world has ended. There's no zombies stomping around. There's no monsters. It's just the government and civilization just caved in on itself. And then the real, you know, the honestly the one that is the real duff one that I don't give a toss about was the last one in here. You might remember from Strange Adventures that the final story in it was a trailer. Well, not a trailer, but it was the first part of Brian Azzarello's Spaceman series, which launched from Vertigo. In fact, I think is about to launch from Vertigo now. It hasn't actually started yet. Yeah, 9-issue limited series starting in October. There's an ad in for it. Well, this one is for what's it called now? Voodoo Child. By Selwyn Hines, without Dennis Cohen, and it is set. It's basically a story. The series is going to be about a descendant of Marie Laveau, the real life voodoo queen of New Orleans, dealing with the spiritual supernatural problems in New Orleans. You know, in the post hurricane world. But this chapter in particular, I mean, this is the thing, is like, whereas Azzarello's Spaceman basically worked on its own as a self-contained glimpse at another like dystopian type future, this is very much like issue one half of Voodoo Child, and I don't care. You know, this is an unashamed trailer, you know. But it's full of like New Orleans accents, so I do enjoy it. But yeah, I'm not gonna embarrass myself by attempting that, because I can't do that. But,
just think of Gambit. Yeah.
That was just Gambit is perhaps the worst example of a yeah, so I didn't care at all. The title is called Blink, Le Prélude de la Mort.
There you go.
That was
very French.
Okay. Yeah. I tell you what it is, yeah. Yeah, so definitely, you know, out of the 9, I would say there's maybe 2 that I thought were kind of duff, you know, so a 7 out of 9 hit ratio. As I say, common unifying theme of tales set after the end, with like 1 or 2 that, particularly the Voodoo Child's getting, there's that's it, like there's no resonance with anything else, like nothing else in the book is really like supernatural. Well, I guess there's 1 or 2 things, like, you know, I wouldn't really call zombies supernatural anymore, you know, and there's like monsters and cavemen and cannibalism and ghosts and what have you. So, I mean, there's some elements of supernatural, but nothing on the level of the literal vampire and werewolf clans warring down in New Orleans.
Yeah, I wouldn't count zombies, because that's like science, right?
Yeah, that's moved sort of beyond that now. So it's definitely at odds with everything else in the book, but pretty much everything else in the book, bar maybe one strip, is good, good stuff. And I would strongly recommend it, if only for the dogs story, which
that's what sold me.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
I wasn't sure about it after the first page or two, but just as the story was unfolding, I wasn't sure, like, the dog standing up and it's just got a shoe between its paws holding the shoe of the murdered girl, and I wasn't, has this guy just drawn a bad dog, or is something going on here?
It's like the Simpsons episode where the dolphins come to
that is
play.
Exactly what it is.
Nice.
But done like in a really fucking scary way. It's the best of it. But G. Willow Wilson's a good writer.
How much is this?
This is the $7.99. The Onyx. No, what?
Is that a book that will wind up on the digital, or is it an exception?
It is 80 pages long, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think there's maybe 7 ads in it, you know? So you're getting more than 70 pages a story.
Oh, all right.
It's worth it, JD. It's worth it.
You know, that is,
you've got dogs that, you know, are awesome.
Right.
These books are my concession to myself. It's like, I look, like, there was an ad in the back of this one here now. It was for, where did I find the ad? It's for a new book from Vertigo. It's called Marzi. And, you know, it's just described here as an honest and heartwarming look into the experiences of a child growing up under conditions we as Americans have never had to live through, you know. It's Life Behind the Iron Curtain. It's an autobiographical comic about a child's life behind the Iron Curtain. And I read that and I think, that sounds really interesting. I would like to read that. I look to my left, I see the stack of 20 graphic novels that I haven't read yet. I look to my right, I see the dozen comic books I have to get left. Next week, I look at my wallet and I go, bollocks. I have too much superhero stuff to read. So these anthologies are like the concession to the part of me that would really like to try and broaden what I'm reading, but don't have the time, space, or money to. So that's, you know, yeah. I always try and recommend these to anybody trying to branch out.
That's cool.
The unexpected.
I like branching out.
You're yeah. a better man than I am.
Yeah, because anyway, we're going to get back to superhero stuff now.
Yeah.
So that was all fun and all. So for the end of our show today, we are going to be talking about Batgirl number 2.
Batgirl!
You thought you might get away without a new 52 review this week. Well, yeah. You're completely wrong.
I came close to talking about a 52.
Yeah.
This is one that we all read. So.
Yeah. So,
we enjoyed the first one. We went back for the other. So,
anyone want to volunteer to do the honors? Not me. No. All right. Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Well, this issue is called "Cut Short, Cut Deep" by Gail Simone with art by Arden Siaf. Still. So, hey, you know, that's two for two. That's more than some books have managed this month so far.
Yes.
And it picks up last month's cliffhanger where the mirror, as Americans would know him. I call him the mirror, but...
We say mirror, don't we?
We say mirror.
Don't we?
Mirror. The mirror. Mirror. Not the mirror.
Not like the, not like the satellite thing.
I'm American. I take my joy where I can get it. Anyway, he's just pushed the boy out the window and Batgirl choked trying to save him. So the story is, broadly, Batgirl following him in a cross-town battle culminating in a fight in a graveyard, in which, and then followed then by her investigating him and learning his origin. So, yeah, that's about the long and the short of it, really.
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
pretty much.
I just got one question about this. Okay, we see her roommate for the second time. Do you think that this roommate's going to be, like, her sidekick? I just get a sidekick feeling eventually.
No.
I'm thinking support character, mostly. I'm thinking sidekick.
Yeah, I'm thinking support character. And that's typical what you're going to see in a second issue. I mean, really, more support character. And
I imagine she's got some kind of issue or story that will probably form the basis for the second or third story arc.
Yeah. but, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think there's a lot of things to like out of this issue. In particular, I like, she did detective work.
Mm-hmm. She did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She did some research. She did some research in front of a computer.
Yeah.
Had a fucking clock tower full of state-of-the-art equipment. Didn't just have to use a library computer.
Yeah, those were the days.
I'm genuinely starting to wonder about, like, her as Oracle right now.
Like, if that was ever,
potentially, if they've literally stricken that, that is potentially even worse than turning her back into Batgirl.
Yeah, but that would make sense. I mean, it would make sense if she was her Oracle that there would be a need for an Oracle. So if they just pretend there wasn't an Oracle, then...
I mean, because, like, the only thing you could do is, like, wouldn't somebody have to replace her as an Oracle? Wouldn't there be a new Oracle? I would think so.
You think somebody could have maybe just replaced her as Batgirl? Somebody, oh, wait, hang on. That Anyway, that's getting
editorial choices that we have no control over. So.
Yeah. that is still the albatross. You know, as well-composed as this issue is, and it is, it genuinely is, this is good. It's probably even a little bit better than the first, I would say. It's still, you know, if you cup your ear, you can hear the as it creaks up to the weight of everything that's just lying on top of it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we said it last time. It's the smart move to tackle this psychological aspect of it head on for your first story arc. It absolutely is. It's definitely the right way to go. A lesser writer could have ignored it entirely, and we probably would have too in that case. You know, it's the right move that's being taken to address it in this fashion. but it's, and you know, and they're, and you know, that's definitely been going well. There's been a big positive response to that. I responded very positively to the first issue when she froze with the gun on her. I really, really liked that, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm still not, even after this issue, I'm not, there's no case being made for why it's a good thing. You know, they're attacking the emotional aspects of it, and they're doing a very, very good job with it. They're selling me on what the character is going through. They're not selling me on why this needs to be at all, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see why. Yeah, I'm not seeing the argument for it's like this has to be
noose around the neck, the millstone that was going to drag the book down, you know. And you know, I mean, we get more hints to this issue about like what she's actually dating her physical therapist at the minute. Was it her physical therapist or
her physical therapist? Yeah.
It was her psychiatrist, wasn't it?
No, it's a physical therapist.
It's her physical therapist. Oh, okay. Yeah. Because she makes the comment that if you know it works out, then I'll just drop you as my therapist, then I'll get another one. You know.
Yeah.
But something I want to ask about is when Jim Gordon hears that Batgirl's back and he's got this shocked look on his face, does he know that she's Batgirl?
See, I was wondering that too.
You know, they say, really think like that, because that is something that, you know, that is actually something that could only happen here. You know, so if there's any kind of case being made at all for what Barbara being Batgirl brings to the role of Batgirl that Stephanie or Cassandra or anybody else couldn't have brought, that is the moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Aside from that, it is all a bit just sort of floaty around the out there. But yeah, I mean, because that's interesting. First of all, yeah, I believe Jim Gordon does know, because it's Jim fucking Gordon. Jim Gordon will know if his daughter's
parents
running around.
Always know about their children.
Yeah,
I mean, sure. I don't know actually what the position is in canon previously as to whether or not he knew. I think he did. I think he
mm-hmm. did also. I think it was.
I always remember that Batman the Animated Series episode wherever the Joker gives Barbara, not the Joker, the Scarecrow gives Barbara the hideous vision of what would happen if she died.
Fantastic episode.
Yeah.
But then it ends like when she tries to tell her dad that she's Batgirl, and he says, "You don't have to tell me anything that you don't want to. Just know that I'm proud of you." And it's like he knows she's Batgirl.
Yeah.
I always took that as just like the base statement on how they work, you know. But you know, that's interesting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she does the humanistic stuff very well, you know. I mean, I get a very good bead on this detective. I don't actually remember her name offhand. McKenna, Detective McKenna. You get a good feel for the character. I mean, I wasn't sure what to make of her when she was just pointing at Batgirl and screaming "Murder!" at the end of the last issue, but it seems at the start of this issue that she was actually shouting that at the mirror, which is like, okay, yeah, because like, you know, Batgirl's not a murderer. She's not the guy who actually pushed him out the window. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's
get a good.
What do you think about the villain? What about?
So yeah, we get this whole origin for Mirror.
I'm pleased to see that they didn't dance about it for too long. They went into the origin right away, and it turns out that he was an army vet who survived a fatal car crash that claimed the life of his mother and daughter. And it's actually really, really great. Like, you know, Barbara credits a miracle with we were just looking at it in a Final Destination-y sort of way last issue, where these people survived circumstances that should have killed them, so he was going around killing them ironically, drowning them, pushing them from great heights or whatever. We didn't, you know, we were looking at the circumstances of their deaths and focusing on the ironic aspect of it, when really he's killing them because of the circumstances of their survival. Like, a miracle allowed him to survive. But he didn't want to survive. He wanted to burn with his family.
Yeah, he wanted to die with his family.
Yeah.
So he's going around killing people who survived through miraculous circumstances because he thinks they're a joke. You know, he thinks their miracles are God laughing at us. So he's showing people that, you know, fuck miracles.
He's doing them a favor. I mean, that he even points that out. Well, he's like, I'm helping them. It's like,
and that makes him such a cool villain for this bat. Yeah. I mean, that makes it. Makes this Batgirl more important.
Yeah.
It can't be Stephanie Brown. It needs to be Barbara Gordon because of that.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, a villain, there's a lot of different kinds of villains, but, you know, you have those villains that are driven by greed or personal gain or motivation, and you can sort of, you know, deal with and bargain with a sort of villain like that, but this type of villain is the more ideologically driven, and that is so hard to deal with. because
it is a very driven by a mania sort of Batman Rogues Gallery type foe, and it, you know, it is it's like Triple says, it is a really good match for what is happening with Barbara here, because I mean, you know, it's about, you know, again, we looked at it and we thought, oh, she didn't die, so he's coming to kill her. But it's not that she didn't die. It's not that she didn't die. It's that she lived miraculously.
Yeah. Oh.
So, you know, I'm coming back around to it again, because this particular villain is one, it is the sort of story that will be very well told. I'm not going to say
good. It's very psychological.
It works well with this.
When he, you know, shows the mirrors and everything, and he says, "Did you see your true face?" That was a good line right there.
I like the thing where he got the mirror from. He saw his family burning in the rearview mirror of his car. That was interesting. That's messed up.
That's a real Batman villain type of thing. Yeah. You know, I shall be the mirror. I mean, again, though, it is still, you know, by binding the villain up, like, conceptually, and the whole idea of Babs regaining the ability to walk, like, miraculously like that, they do make this a story that is about her and gains its resonance from starring her, so it works in that sense. So that does something to offset what I was saying last issue. But at the same time, it is a story that's built around that, and, you know, not every story that's going to be in this comic can be built around ironic villains who happen to parallel her personal development.
Or at least we can hope not.
Sooner or later, you know, no pun intended, the book is going to have to stand on its own two feet actually make a case for Barbara Gordon as Batgirl, while not facing villains that ironically parallel the circumstances she's recently undergone.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to make that a thing with every villain. I think that we're going to get a conclusion this, and then we're going to move on. It's just whether or not moving on will be good or bad.
We definitely will have to, and I don't think anybody would even try to keep this theme up, but it hasn't yet. It's godlike, you know, I can't even really say that it's trying, because the story is actually so intrinsically tied up in this concept, but it's going to have to make a case for Babs as Batgirl outside of this psychological survivor's guilt aspect.
I think we're going to get something out of the next issue, because Nightwing's going to be in the next issue.
Yeah, that's real important to have a crossover with another character in the third issue of your launch title.
Babs and Nightwing. I mean, Babs and Nightwing.
Yeah, I know.
It's just a long history going by. They'll probably bang. It's the new 52.
Well, the thing is, DC is also introducing Black Canary in the next Green Arrow, too.
Because that's important as well. Yeah, there's another title that doesn't need help.
I admit the second Green Arrow was a lot better than the first one. So,
well, that's good.
And with Anderson taking it over, that'll be good.
Yeah, but I think the most important thing we learned from this is Professor Stein lives.
Yes, there's a message scrawled on a subway car. Professor Stein lives, but Gail Simone on Firestorm doesn't.
Yeah. So. Wow.
I didn't even see that.
Allegedly, I guess. We haven't really gotten confirmation of that.
So. Well, basically, I'm taking the silence as confirmation. Yeah. I may be wrong, but in this social media world. Yeah. Anyway.
I would say it's
probably a better book than the first issue, because I think going right in and not wasting any time and really giving us the mirror's origin and motivation have definitely helped tie the story together thematically in a way I didn't see coming. It doesn't escape... It doesn't do anything to really help the book escape my fears for it and the things that I think are holding it back, but it does definitely make this story pack a bit more of a punch than I thought it was going to have. So it's like, it's improving this story while not really doing anything to improve the... You know what I'm saying. I'm finding it hard to... Yeah.
It's breaking under the weight of editorial.
This mirror story... has been improved by this. Like, it went to another level of storytelling that I didn't think it was going to do, but it is still all very much relying on the emotional trauma, which is being done well, but cup your ear and you can hear it creaking under the weight of past. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, But it's good. I'm going to keep up with it. I mean, it's still, you know, it's still on my list. So.
As long as Gail sticks with it, I'll stick with it at least.
Yeah.
I have to agree with you there.
Yeah, I probably will do much the same. But, well, I'm certainly going to give it to the end of its first story arc anyways. It's probably about six. Well, to be honest, this mirror thing feels like it could end after three or four. So we'll see how it goes. But,
I was thinking three, because the way that it's set up with this ultimate decision thing she's got to do at the end of it, I'm thinking the third issue is going to be the end of this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but if that's the end of this issue, it's certainly not enough time as of yet, I don't think, to wrap up the psychological aspect of the story. So as long as that is still, you know, that well, let's say that can only run for so long before it becomes like before you're wanting it to move on. It can't just be what it's always going to be about. But it's strong to open with it, but it's going to have to make a case and go somewhere else eventually. And it's just not done that yet. I mean, it's only its second issue, obviously, but it's just one. It's a unique circumstance where you're acutely aware of what has gone into the book, the story behind it, that unlike, it's probably the only one of the new 52 that's really, really being affected in this way, but it is being affected by it. And it's a book that's trying its hardest. And it just hasn't broken through that glass ceiling yet. We'll see how it goes. I'm not giving up on it yet or anything, but it is definitely, I'm looking at it very closely.
Yeah. So awesome. Okay. Well, that's it. There you go. Show again, we did it. Another week,
awesome.
All here again.
Under
so
2 hours,
good.
Yay!
Yay! We're incredible. It's like we planned that way. So, anyway, go check out the website tfradio.net or fanboyversus.com. Follow us on Twitter at fanboyvs. There you'll get updates about the show coming out and things we talk about and all that fun, happy stuff. Also, wanted to point out, we are part of the TF Radio Network, and yesterday was Radio Free Cybertron's 12th anniversary.
So
12 years. I know. God. I went and started digging through old Alt.Toys Transformer posts and listened to, like, the original post. It was nostalgic, let me tell you. It was classic. So, anyway.
I remember.
Go check out that. We're... your friend and host Brian Kilby.
And just before we go, let me remind you again to check out that comic, His Face All Red.
His Face All Red.
His Face All Red by Emily Carroll.
Okay.
Just if you want a little bit of a taster of what may be awaiting you in the unexpected or the tone of the thing that may convince you to pick it up. His Face All Red.
His Face All Red. All right.
I'm shilling for something I don't know and I'm not getting any money from. I don't know where she don't listen, but it's just well worth reading.
Cool. So anyway, yep. And check out on all the cool stuff. I guess we'll have the final news out of New York Comic Con.
And before we go, Arkham City comes out Tuesday. We didn't mention that.
Oh,
Arkham City!
Yeah, very nice.
Everybody loves it already, and I will talk about it next week because I will be picking it up.
Sweet. Okay, well, I guess we already lost Nicole.
Make sure there hasn't been any more news since we started, but I don't see anything. Looks like we're good for NYCC.
We'll cover it next week. So, okay, very good. All right, well, again, thank you, team. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.